Today's program is brought to you by Brooklyn Slate Company, a manufacturer of slate cheese boards, coasters, and other fine items. For more information, visit brooklynslate.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
What's up, people? This is the Reverend Spiro, and this is Eating Disorder.
Yeah. Woo!
This is our first episode, and we are real happy to be here with you in Heritage Radio Networks. We're here to debunk, discuss, and deflower the food culture as we see it. I'm here with my hosts, Chef Paul Girard and Adam Velez.
The pituitary twin.
The pituitary
twin. And our guest, Dustin Helgeson.
Yes, yes.
From Sweden Unlimited. It's a digital agency. And our other friend, Billy Gilroy, who is responsible for two of our favorite joints in New York, Employees Only and Macau Trading. And we are here to talk about, basically, food trends, food cliches, food foibles. It's basically the insanity and the obsession that
has
taken,
stop.
That has taken over America. Are we too fat? Are we too thin? Is it too healthy? Is it unhealthy?
Is this organic?
As you go.
Gluten-free.
And basically, that's what we're going to talk about. Our first show, this particular episode, is going to be about food trends in 2013, what we loved, what we hate. And I do want to stress that we do this show because we love food.
We love
yes.
food.
We love food.
We're the
bread and butter is our bread
it.
And butter.
That's right. See, my co-hosts actually have, like, you know, cred in the food industry. I just like to eat.
That's all it takes, really.
But before we get into that, we are going to get into some news. We had some news.
What's the news?
Well, the news in the last week was...
Is there a new mashup that we need to know about?
No new mashup, but we had the RIP.
Is there
report.
Something clever? God, I hope there's something clever.
No, I'm going to try to be clever.
Is there something in a ball? Something in a ball.
It'll get to a ball, but we have the RIP report. And
is it bigger than a gluten-free bread box?
Absolutely bigger, but we lost three wonderful places in New York, three of our favorite places. We lost 7A in the East Village. We lost Milady's in Soho.
Wow.
You know, and then we lost... Papaya King, and we're sure that they're going to be replaced with Dwayne Reed's or Chase Banks or
Liquiteria.
Liquiteria.
don't get me started.
No, but we salute their time and their service to our fair city. Additionally, in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Daily News has reported that there is a cheese fornicator in Philadelphia.
The Swiss cheese masturbator. Is
yes,
that his name?
That's actually
that is
guy.
A nickname that I wish I had. Honestly, you can't make that. You can't make that up.
We have a man.
If you can actually
is,
get it into a hole in Swiss cheese, you might want to keep that to yourself.
Well, I mean, look, the guy drives up to Swiss. He drives up to not Swiss women, but women, and asks them to help him violate this piece of cheese.
Really?
Yes, he absolutely does.
That's pretty good. I never tried that.
Additionally, our friend.
You should try it sometime.
I'd like to see the looks on their faces.
I'm lactose intolerant. I really. I don't know if it works. It swells up, which is actually
so much for our zero tolerance policy.
Our friends at Gothamist have reported that Kizo Shimamoto, the guy who invented the ramen burger, on his blog introduced the ramen sausage and egg, the ramen brisket sandwich, and the ramen pork belly sandwich, which means when you put proteins between carbohydrates, they taste good.
Fantastic. I'm going to do a cronut burger.
Cronut burger.
Why didn't I think of
dude,
that?
Dude, you're like Paula like Deen.
That's the French Elvis. Come on.
That is. Nailed it.
And finally, our own Mayor de Blasio, who we have so much hope for, ate his slice at Goodfellas Pizza in Staten Island.
Power move, SINY 10314. I have to send a shout out.
He ate it with a fork.
Oh my God.
That's a fucking sacrilege.
Yeah, and the
Staten Island Republicans, you know, called for his impeachment and said, remember Benghazi.
You cannot eat pizza with a fork and knife.
No.
And I just want to get this straight right now. The chicken is not a fucking pizza topping. It's not. Barbecue sauce has
buffalo,
no place
buffalo
near chicken.
Buffalo chicken pizza?
Ever.
Not a fan?
No ranch dressing on pizza.
I hope he ordered this pizza. I hope he ordered it. He said, I want some fresh mozzarella. Because that's like kind of the, one of the things that you have to say, if especially being from Staten Island. You don't say mozzarella cheese.
No, he's from freaking Connecticut.
But you have to at least, you know, if I go to like, you know, Tibet, I'm going to say namaste. You know, I'm going to be appropriate. If you go to Staten Island, you say fresh mozzarella. You know, let me get some mozzarella. You don't say mozzarella cheese, please. And some super sata. I say super sata, gabagol. You know, you have to have
let me get a man of God.
It's appropriate.
Put some prosciutto on that.
That is our news. But we're gonna get straight into trends, okay? And I mean, there's been so many trends, and I want to talk a little bit about food culture. We looked up the word culture, the arts and other manifestations of human intellectual achievement regarded collectively. All right,
through Instagram.
Through Instagram, yeah, no, I did, of course. You know, all I do is on Facebook. It's everything. If my news comes off of Facebook, it's like
it's.
So that's pretty bad, though, man. I mean, look at the fucking thing with the snow on the pyramids. I mean, everybody just they eat it up. They eat up everything. Anything that's put out there, everybody believes it immediately without giving anything any thought.
Yeah,
and I'm with them.
If it's on the internet, it must be true.
It must be.
But what we want to take is the word cult, because, see, this is the problem we're seeming to have. It's not about the culture anymore. Culture includes food, and culture includes music and art and writing and history, and it's become cultish in regards to the way we look at food.
Yeah, but it's not even that cool. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, when we were all coming up, you know, even when we were kids growing up in Brooklyn, you know, we were surrounded by a bunch of different cultures. You know, Brooklyn has so many different cultures, and we were eating all different types of food. And I started in the business at 13 years old, and it wasn't like that then. I remember when nobody knew what the fuck cilantro was.
You know? Coriander? What is this? This is delicious. Alfalfa sprouts? This is fantastic.
Mexican parsley. But now it's just, it's not even a cult. I mean, cult, that sounds kind of cool. It's top 40, you know, and once it becomes top 40, it's just not fun anymore.
Well, the way I look at the
I remember the first time Guns N' Roses was on Z100. I wanted to fucking shoot someone.
I like that, too.
I hear you, but the way I look at cultish is look at vegans. I mean, have you talked to a vegan? Has the conversation ever not seemed like there would be Kool-Aid at the end of it?
How do you know someone's a vegan, Spyro?
How?
They'll tell you.
With a card. With a laminated card.
All right, but there's other trends we want to talk about. Like, all right. Some of the trends that have been important have been things like local, cruelty-free. Can you actually have cruelty-free meat? Does it exist? Can there be cruelty-free meat?
It's interesting you brought that up, Spyro. I was just in Europe over the holidays, and there's a new study out that they're doing that they're actually researching a high frequency that plants emit, and they're rethinking whether or not plants can have feelings. So now we're going on a whole new level, because if we get this, then you're going to get all the people that are going to sit around and say, oh no, the plants don't have feelings. So talking about the cult, what's the next cult going to be when no one wants to eat plants?
That gives me an idea. If we can fuse ourselves with chlorophyll, then we can eat from the sun. We'll all turn green, and then we can eat from the sun.
Or chloroform, either or.
Well, okay, but
we're already taking chloroform.
But to that level, I mean, when it comes down to, all right, Billy, let me throw this one at you. You know, when it comes down to, like, fair trade and you know, cruelty-free, I mean, does it matter if a tomato was grown on a roof and a building was stored after the Hurricane Sandy by neighborhood volunteers with fair trade seeds picked by crippled orphans, you know, and the money they raise goes to no-kill shelters? Does that end up on your menu?
No, that wouldn't end up on the menu. I have an issue with, I heard a chef recently who was talking about that if, you know, you used all sustainable, you know, agriculture and so on and so forth, and, you know, raised, you know, humanitarily and such, versus somebody that went to the A&P and knew how to cook. And if I'm sitting down at a restaurant and I have a meal, you know, by someone who, you know, went to the local, you know, Western Beef, but, you know, created something that was absolutely delicious, am I going to favor, you know, no, I'd rather have this other dish over here that doesn't taste as good and, you know, and is more expensive. So if you could pull it off and have both, absolutely. It's a wonderful idea. But the idea that that's the selling point versus, you know, the fact that the food tastes good is what I have issue with.
That's something that I have issue with, too. It's like all of these things that you're talking about, Spiro, in and of themselves are fantastic. I mean, we want to move to a place where we're doing things that are better for the world and better for ourselves, obviously. But the thing that gets me is the pretension that gets involved with it. You know, like, you see a lot of people walking around Brooklyn and they have, you know, quinoa hanging out of their Buy Local tote bags and they have their yoga mats, you know, but they don't fucking say hello to each other.
Well, and I mean, even on that token,
Paul, I'll say hello to you.
To talk on that note, a lot of people don't understand that one of the biggest problems in something like quinoa is the local population is getting outsourced to the point where there are more McDonald's now in South America because their harvested crop they used to eat is getting sent to Brooklyn. So you're like, okay, so now we're making the rest of the world
chicken
fat because we're trying to be skinny.
Yeah, but dealing with things local includes feelings.
Yeah, right.
So,
exactly.
You know, I mean, those are feelings that are happening in Peru. You know, let's stick with our feelings here in Brooklyn.
All right.
And we have a lot of them.
So. Yeah, I just have an issue with, you know, the idea that you have to be, you know, convinced or talked into why something else is supposedly better when, you know, just by virtue of eating it, you can tell for yourself. The flavor is such that you don't think it's better, but you know it's like, you know, the king with no clothing. Everyone, God forbid, you say that you know free range such and such isn't more tasty than this other, you know, dish that's perhaps not raised that way. Then you're the odd man out.
That's how our Shut Up and Eat logo or our motto started. It's just like shut up and eat. That's it. You know, enjoy it, and that's what you do.
And again, that's part. We again just gotta reiterate this. We love food and we love being healthy, though we can try harder at it. But you know, let me ask you, mostly the restaurant owners here, Paul and Billy. I mean. What about the photographing the food thing? I mean,
God.
It's got to be good for your restaurant. I mean, it is.
You know what? It's good for the restaurant, but there's a certain amount of decorum that needs to come out of it. You know, like if I get up and I come out to have dinner with you and you're too busy to take fucking pictures, you know, put your phone away.
You're like a Japanese tourist. Like, I can't stand that shit.
You know, talk to each other, you know, and nobody gives a fuck about the pictures. Nobody looks at them, you know. If I'm scrolling through Instagram, I see pictures, food.
I mean, you got to argue for argument's sake. If your Instagram is just pictures of food and I specifically followed you because it's pictures of food, I like your fucking pictures of food.
Yeah, but
now if it's Spyro throwing a picture of a hot dog mixed in with like his like some kids in a
half-eaten
bar
from Shake Shack
on a basket rug.
I don't want to see this.
See, I came from an era when you opened a restaurant, if it was good, you didn't have any of this stuff, and there was a line out the door, and you know, you were successful based on its own merits. You know, now the idea that unless you're doing all these things, you're not going to make it as a restaurant, to me is absurd, and it's just it's a different thing. It's what for me, restaurant business was separate. Unless you're going to do a 3 or 4 star restaurant, it was always about being fun driven. The food, the service should be good, you know, the atmosphere should be good, and so on and so forth. But the idea that, you know, people are going to Instagram 100 pictures or tell everybody and their mother that they like it is going to be the determining factor as to whether or not you're successful. To me, is really, you know, something that's alien to me. But it seems to be the direction things are going in.
Speaking of alien, I can imagine like 1,000 years down the line, after some crazy calamity that wipes out the human race, and all that extraterrestrials have on this planet is nothing but Instagram photos of ramen burgers. Holy shit, a planet of food!
The fuck is wrong?
That's it. Like, seriously, that's all we have as our legacy as human beings.
Selfies
of food. We got
a couple of minutes before the break. I want to throw this one out there. You know, waiting in line at a restaurant or a club or a bar, it's something we've gotten used to. New York, because it happens every so often. But what about waiting in line at fucking Shake Shack or at the fucking Cronut joint? Okay, look, honestly, it's you're gonna wait in line for a half hour for an experience that lasts 4 fucking minutes.
It's like waiting in line at David and Buster's to hand in your tickets for some saltwater taffy for an hour when you want to toss $20 bills at the guy.
Which
going, just give me the fucking animal.
Last night
with
his son.
I mean, come on, though. You gotta admit, though, like, there's a difference between the Shake Shack and the Cronut. The Cronut is like, okay, come on. Really? You're going to stand outside? You're really standing outside?
On the black
Sofas.
Market.
Really?
Buying it on the black
Seriously?
Market.
Seriously, like, Shake Shack, you're getting a really good hamburger. Whatever. Wait a few minutes. Deal with it.
I haven't waited on a line for anything since 1987 in Lower
Must
East Side.
Must be rough.
And it came in a little paper package. All right, guys, we're gonna go to break. Thanks so much. We'll talk again. This is Eating Disorder. Woo! Thanks so much.
You are listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Eating Disorder.
Brooklyn Slate Company is a collaborative effort from Brooklyn graphic designer Sean Tice and Parsons graduate student Christy Hedeka. After visiting Christy's family slate quarry in upstate New York in the spring of 2009, the two grabbed a few pieces for use as all-purpose boards back home in Brooklyn. They found a number of purposes for the slate and began gifting pieces to friends. The response was so overwhelmingly positive that the two struck out to produce a line of slate products. They now make regular trips to the family quarry in upstate New York to hand-pick their favorite pieces of black and red slate. Some of the slate is sourced from the quarry graveyard, a collection of odd-shaped pieces that were ultimately destined to be ground for use as road cover or baseball diamonds. They then transport the pieces to their studio in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where they do additional cutting and clean the stone to be food slate. Every single piece of packaging that comes with their products, from the envelope to the burlap bag, can be repurposed for other uses. The end result is a product completely unique in cut, shape, color, and overall presentation. For more information and to order, visit brooklynslate.com.
Hey, folks, we're back with Eating Disorder. I'm here with Chef, this is Derev Spiro here with Chef Paul Gerard out in Velez.
Hey,
we're here with our friends Dustin Helgeson from Sweden Unlimited and Billy Gilroy from Employees Only Macau Trading. And this episode is about trends, and we're going to go right into that. We're going to talk about trends that happened in 2013, what we love, what we hate. Some of the things that come up right off the top of our heads is
kale.
I had kale today before I got here, only because I was force-fed by my girlfriend after having a hallucinogenic nightmare last night. So she had
it wasn't
to,
a nightmare.
Well, when you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Did she massage it for you first?
No, she didn't. She
I was told by your chef that you have to massage the kale first.
Really?
In order for it to be tender, yeah.
That's what all my ladies say.
Especially if it's a suppository, but you know.
Kale suppository.
Yeah, but it's so funny too, because I woke up and I saw the kale, and I knew we had the show today, and I said, really, babe? Fucking kale?
After a night of mushrooms.
After a night of mushrooms, which I did not agree to take. I just love chocolate. And real quick, this is to all our listeners out there. If you don't have a friendly drug dealer and he offers you chocolate, chances are that shit ain't chocolate. All right? And I want you to pay attention to that. But yeah, I had kale today, and it was fantastic. I have to say, I did like it because, I was nursing a fucking
hallucinogen. Was it part of his mushroom program? His mushroom chocolate program?
It was his mushroom chocolate truffle hallucinogen.
That's something we definitely need to talk about.
Actually,
fucking program.
Hallucinogenic cleanse. We're going to get into that, too. The other thing is about flights and programs. You know,
hey, Billy,
there is a place.
Billy, you remember the day when programs were called menus?
Yeah. Menus.
My food program. Yeah, it's a fucking menu.
That's programs is what my grandmother used to say when she was like, oh, that's a good program on there. She's talking about like One Life to Live.
That's a nice picture.
I like that picture movie, that show.
But there's a restaurant in America today, you know, pot has been legalized in some places, that has a pot program.
That I love.
I'm very curious.
I am down to clown
Colorado,
with the pot program.
Yeah, Colorado, they have
a
pot
that
program.
That serves a purpose. That dude Mountain. Knows how to get you high.
Flight has a
because
double meaning.
Because you're a chef, you don't need to teach me how to eat. No
pun intended. It's
get a good appetite, good appetite.
And kale, you know?
I would do that. I have no problems with kale.
What about quinoa? I love quinoa. I hate quinoa people.
I hate saying quinoa. I love it, but I hate saying it. Hey, I really do. I feel like every time I say it, I should have like some fucking accent.
You should
quinoa.
Just pronounce it wrong all the time. Especially
can I have some
Vietnam.
Quinoa?
Can I get some quinoa?
Can I have a quesadilla?
People will drive fucking crazy, man. They'll get so pissed off just correcting you all the time.
Well,
ancient grains.
One of the things.
It is delicious, though. Come on.
It is. It's really good. I mean, and actually, I'm a fan of quinoa from the sweet side. I like it with raisins and cranberries and nuts.
It's a phenomenal resource.
It really is. And the same with kale. No, I fucking hate kale. Okay.
You know what? One of the things is like.
Try to kale anima? That's the best thing for you.
The whole intention of this is not to just sound like a bunch of bitches and just, you know, whining about everything. You know, it is. Everything has become very top 40. But the thing that really irks me the most is that the way things are with culinary TV and with the bloggers and how it's just completely captivated everybody is that me and my colleagues have lost our voice. You know, nobody is out there speaking for us the way that we speak to each other. You know, so it's become like everything is dictated to us by, you know, some buffoons on TV wearing their fucking sunglasses on the back of their head.
Or Yelp.
Well, and that goes to speak again yet again on trends. And in my line of work where we do a lot of trend forecasting and all of that stuff, the internet has made all of this accessible to everyone. So now Socrates has a soapbox in his iPhone.
Right, right, exactly.
So I don't need to hear your opinion if you're a janitor from Queens about quinoa. All right? I love you. You're great.
Yeah, I like
thank
it.
You for
that. But sometimes like that. I like
yeah,
it.
I like it
with raisins. It's delicious. You have to try something.
You know what I mean? But it's just that's the thing. It's like we're talking about culture, and culture was originally given to you by people who had some sort of clout, which, Paul, stop me if I'm wrong, it was you. You were the guys who told us.
It was. It totally was.
You were the guys. And you know what I mean?
Still is.
But that's how this whole culture started, was the idea that we had to look to the people who knew what they were talking about to tell us how to like it.
Yeah, when did we forget what we didn't like? When did we have to start looking?
When everybody got a fucking voice.
Exactly.
And that's the
internet.
Well, let me throw this one at Billy. Okay, this is one of the things that personally, as an eater, I love sauce. I do. The squiggles.
You want to be Jackson
smears,
Pollock?
The skid marks. The Jackson Pollock on
the child skid mark is the worst.
I don't see it much at your place.
No Rothko at my place. You got to give them a book to explain that, you know, how to enjoy the dish.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like artwork that you look at it, you like it or you don't like it, but then there's artwork that you have to be explained as to why you're stupid if you don't like it. And yeah, that's where it gets to the point where it's a little ridiculous. And no, I haven't seen squiggles at my place in a while.
I'm going to do a 27-course tasting menu. Maybe 28. No, yeah, I'm going to do 29. 29 courses.
And it's
all the size of a quarter.
Is it going to be a smear program? Is that going to be the...
There'll be a schmear program. Whenever anybody starts having conversation amongst themselves, I'm going to come out and snap my fingers and say, let's get the focus on me, people. Come on.
That's a nano biscuit in front of you. Eat it, motherfucker. It's delicious and it's small.
The schmear
China is taking over.
A bagel shop. Schmear program.
All right. Let's
how about inner city farmhouses? I mean,
oh,
come
that's
on.
A good one. That's
hey, Billy,
one, yeah.
You designed my restaurant. I mean, you know, that was one of the things that we talked about a lot, the whole inner city farmhouse thing. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's out of control. It's just out of control.
Yeah, but in your place, you've got a garden in the backyard, and it's fantastic. Yeah,
and
I
truly believe in all these things, and I believe in local,
Who designed your garden again?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay. He has a green thumb.
I did it with my friend Sisha from River Park.
Oh,
Sisha
excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Cool.
But, you know, it irks me. I think one of the things that really gets me is you go into these inner city farmhouses and they're playing like the Clash or the Ramones. It's just the two of them together. Just, you know, it's like, come on, people. You can't have both. You
it's
know?
A trend. Like, it's not necessarily doing it because it's something they love to do. It's because it's the cool thing to do.
Yeah, but, you know, like... You know, back in, you know, 2000 or whenever the fuck, like, Kitchen Confidential came out, you know, like, everybody who had been in it for a long time, you know, I started cooking in the early 80s. We had been in it for a long time, and although everybody loves Bourdain, it was kind of like he pulled back the curtain on, like, what was ours. You know, we looked at it as, like, you know, this is our thing, you know? And now it's like everybody proclaims that they know what's going on with food and with kitchens and everything, but they still really have no fucking idea. They have no idea how hard we work and how hard we... You know, the time that we put in, the energy we put in, then they go home and they get on Yelp and they're like, I kind of like the sauce, but I think the sauce should go on the side, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, shut the fuck up, people. Enough already.
Well, I remember, you know? Paul, when you did the garden that, you know, I mean, how many different types of lettuces there are versus what's really available if you go to the market, you know, 100 versus 20 or something like that. And, you know, when you have these places that it's just basically a showpiece, you know, it's the same shit that they could pick up the phone and call and order through their produce person, but they're using it as a marketing technique to basically say, look what we're doing. You know, we're growing our own, you know, parsley. It's like, great. Yeah. You're growing your own parsley.
Well, which takes us back to kind of what you said before, where it's, you know, it's you know, the tail wagging the dog kind of thing. You know, now the marketing has surpassed the actual product.
Well, yeah. That goes to show, yeah, you know, would you, you know, how long ago was it when you didn't hire a branding company to figure out what the name of your restaurant's going to be?
Yeah, but does putting parsley in a wicker basket make it taste better? You know what I'm saying? Like, and when I go to Western Beef and I get whatever meat in a shitty, greasy, blood stain,
well,
it makes
the wicker taste better.
It makes the wicker taste better.
That's my parsley program.
Boulay, for instance, is taking a space two blocks from Macau on Church Street. And he's going to be using it mostly for events and such. But it's a large loft space. But from floor to ceiling, all he has is these, you know, flower boxes filled with herbs or things. It's a design element. It's not that aesthetic. He needs it in order to, you know, produce the food he's cooking. It's this... thing.
See, if they're actually using it, that's pretty cool, though.
It might as well be flowers, is what we're hearing. Well, we got into some wagon wheels.
If I put a wagon wheel on the wall, it makes all my food taste better.
I'm saying it gets to that point, though.
That's how you get the barbecue sauce in your burger, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Wagon wheel.
Well, okay, what about the things that are up and coming? We've heard a lot of things in the media about what's up and coming. One of the things that we collectively heard.
I hope it's Ancient Grains. Please say Ancient Grains.
No, it's New Cuts of Meat.
Oh! From snout to tail. Nothing new to Puerto Ricans, I'll tell you that much, all right? Listen, that's something to white people. Now, I'm saying this, and I'm half, you know, I'm Greek, we have a National Geographic calling me up trying to do a special in my background. But my old man ate things, I swear to God, I didn't know they came from living animals. Like, it was, I was like, what is that? He didn't even tell me what it was. And it was smothered in sauce, but I knew it didn't come from the proper chop. It was like the fucking kidney or like the earlobe of a fucking pig. It wasn't the ear, you know, it was something strange. And that's something that was necessity. People had to make use of chitlins.
Cheap cuts.
Yeah. And now people are rediscovering these cheap cuts. I find that absolutely phenomenal. They've always been around.
That's going back to kale. Kale was a piece of shit fucking green forever. Exactly. You know?
Kale was the thing that blanketed your dirty ass plate from the diner you were eating your sub on. You know, that's what they used kale for. It was to blanket the last dude who, like, you know, did a line of blow off that plate.
Well, yeah, but when, okay, we know what offal is, and look, I'm Greek. We eat fucking guts and whatever. But like, what is a new kind of meat? I mean, we're talking about meat. I mean, did it grow a new arm? I mean,
they're basically pulling pieces of meat out of larger cuts of meat. You know, so and most of this stuff is coming from the chuck. You know, it's coming, and they're just dissecting the muscle. But you know, it's nothing new. Everybody's been doing it, and then it's just all hype and marketing.
This is Chuck Taylored.
The pig's ear has been getting a lot of play. Pig's ear. Most recently, April Broomfield. That's a pig's ear terrine. I can't wait.
It's a fashion thing. You can make a purse out of it.
But that's where it comes in interesting. You know, being a little bit outside of the food industry and all this stuff. I don't necessarily. I didn't always have this. I'm from Minnesota, land of hot dishes, as you know. And I most recently have been spending a lot of time in Scotland, and I had my first try of haggis.
I love haggis. I love it.
Unbelievable. In America, people think it's crazy. These guys have been eating it since like they're all using sticks with fire.
Right.
Okay. Well, the last thing I want to throw out, we got a couple more minutes here. Balls. We've been seeing a lot of balls
lately.
Meatballs, cake balls, lollipop
ready balls.
Meat the balls.
Yeah. Paulie makes an amazing jambalaya ball. It's like a Brooklyn rice ball. It's fantastic.
Staple.
But it's ball form. We got a couple more minutes. You guys want to talk about balls for a minute?
I love balls. Listen, everything's a fucking ball. Planet Earth's a ball. Everything's a ball. So, you know, Taurus. You know, we came from balls.
Scientists
have
proven that the new improved ball form is the
best. They say new and improved ball form.
I have to admit, we do have balls on the menu at Macau. I can't. Not quite.
Well, what kind of balls do you have?
Rocky Mountain oysters.
We do these lamb balls with a verde sauce, which is very nice. They're delicious. But yes, the balls we had to give in to the balls. We had the balls off after Waltuck left, and then we had to give in and bring the balls back.
Balls are good, man.
People want
everybody
the balls.
Likes balls. Come on, you love my balls.
Listen, I love the balls.
The thing about balls is that you can never serve just two. It always has to be an odd number. You can't just be like, here's some balls, and it's just two balls. And it's funny.
You can't take them out of the sack.
You can literally, you know, as a server working in the restaurant industry, you know, for over 10 years and always being in the front of the house and talking to people, I always have to explain, especially working in Paul's restaurant, we have jambalaya balls. And one of my pitches to these customers is always, you know, it's the only time where having three balls in your mouth isn't a bad thing, you know, because it's an appropriate number of balls.
I agree.
If you're eating
them. We're all in agreement.
All right. Well, folks, listen, thank you so much again. This has been our first episode. Yes, we are. Of Eating Disorder.
Really just getting
warmed
up.
Thank you, Billy Gilroy.
Thank you,
Dustin Helgeson. Thank you, Chef Paul Girard and Adam Velez. I am the Rev Spiro.
The Rev Spiro.
Have a good night.
Eating Disorder.
Yep.
Well, the white girls, when they leave the city, you come to play once, I'm coming up again.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.